Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the security camera. And you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UKF Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I welcome back Jennifer Hanway, board certified nutritionist and wellness expert, where we talk about the importance of gut health. Jennifer, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, Gavin. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming back. We discussed this last time in the last show that it would be brilliant for you to come back on a few times because there's loads of stuff. And so this time, gut health is, I know, a very important subject. Before we go down this road, just remind our listeners a bit about your background. That'd be brilliant, I think.
Sure. So I am living in Boston in the US. I've been here for 8 years, but as you can probably hear, I'm originally from Guildford. I'm a board certified holistic nutritionist and wellness expert, and I talk on all things gut health and stress and sleep and immunity and all of that wonderful fun stuff.
Brilliant stuff. And how's things in Boston? How's everything with your work in Boston going?
Good. Yeah, I'm still a little bit too much based from home. So, you know, wish I could be a little bit more out and about and kind of traveling the country. But that's fine. Got a trip back home booked for Christmas because I do love Christmas in the UK. So I'm going to get my mulled wine on and my mince pie and, you know, walk down Oxford Street. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously catching up for what it would be now the last couple of years, because last year, unfortunately, as we all know, it was not the best of Christmases because we were in lockdown. But at least you can catch up with the family and everyone and do all the Christmassy things. I think it'll be brilliant.
Yeah, I'm excited. And we get Boxing Day as well. We don't have Boxing Day in the US. So
don't you?
No, Boxing Day. Yeah.
Oh, is it only the UK? I didn't know that. Right. You must be so shocked. Yeah. You must be like, oh, this is one reason for me to move back to the UK.
I know. Boxing Day is like Christmas without the pressure. I love Boxing Day.
Yeah, it's like a recovery period from the last you know few days. Like, you know, you get Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day is that time to kind of wind down a bit, just recover from everything, and you know, so that's a bit of a shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's another show. Basically, let's talk about gut health. What causes? Well, firstly, let's start with what is poor gut health.
Yes, it's interesting. So I have talked about gut health for years, and then someone came to me and said, well, what is a healthy gut? And I was like, well, that's a really interesting question. Like, that's something that I had never thought to address. So when we think of gut health, we really think of two parts. We think of the microbiome, which is where the good and bad bacteria live. And then we think of the intestinal lining or the gut wall. And really, we want to keep these nice and healthy and balanced. And a healthy gut will make sure that it keeps out things like bacteria and pathogens and food particles, but will also be able to absorb the nutrients and the goodness from our food.
Right. Now, when I think of poor gut health, I just think of, you know, where someone's got a bit of a gut, do you know what I mean? And it's hanging out. I've got a little bit of a gut, you know, it is what it is. And I'm proud of it. I don't care. But, you know, that's my idea of it. But I suppose poor gut health can be interpreted in a number of ways. Would that be right?
Yeah, we're really thinking about, when we say gut health, we're really thinking about digestive health. So everything from what goes on in the mouth, all the way through to what comes out in the toilet. So part of my job is talking about poop. So there is, we can talk about that today. So really when we're talking about gut health, we're talking about digestive health.
Oh, so to test gut health, the feces need to be, basically a sample needs to be taken and investigated on. Would that be correct? Like the sample taken and tested and all the rest of it?
Yeah, so that's one way of looking at it. So stool testing is one way of looking at gut health, but there's lots of other different ways that we can look at. So we can do a poop test, so we can actually look at the health of our own stools. That can tell us a ton about what's going on with digestion. But we can also think about things like, are we bloated? Are we gassy? Are we constipated? How energized are we? Do we have skin issues? And we can also see some things in our lab work as well, so in terms of inflammatory markers. So there's a lot that we can think about in terms of how we test our gut health.
Right. What causes poor gut health? Now, I know the obvious might jump out here, you know, excessive beer, you know, more excessive beer, and just generally eating fatty foods, like wonderful fish and chips, which I love. And I know you love fish and chips as well. And how can, you know, UK and all the rest of it, how can you not? But I mean, what causes poor gut health? What are some of the top line stuff?
Yeah, so really you kind of hit the nail on the head. So overly processed foods, so foods that are high in sugar, high in inflammatory fats, high in gluten, high in dairy. So foods that are really, really processed, foods that don't look like foods in their original form. Alcohol is absolutely one of them. So this is not the odd beer or the odd glass of wine, but this is excessive use of alcohol. Stress can be a huge one as well, which is kind of challenging considering the amount of stress that we've all been under recently. Lack of sleep, medications, environmental toxins. So as you can hear, basically living as a human in our modern day world can take an effect on our gut health.
That's really interesting. When you say stress and insomnia, would it be the actual stress insomnia itself, or does it cause you to lead a certain lifestyle because of the stress and insomnia that causes poor gut health?
So I'm going to say a little bit of both. So let's take the stress piece of the puzzle first. So too much stress can actually cause poor gut health, but poor gut health can then also cause stress as well. So it's this vicious cycle. And when we're stressed out, what we do is we produce a hormone called cortisol, and cortisol is our stress hormone. And what cortisol does is it breaks things down. So cortisol is catabolic to the body. And what that means is that when we're overly stressed out, we can actually break down the cellular wall, so that gut lining, and allow things into our digestive system that really shouldn't be there. Now, if we talk about sleep, what happens when we sleep is that we detoxify and we repair. So if we're not getting enough sleep, we're not going to repair any of the tissues in our body, including the tissues in our digestive system.
Right. Okay. So it is a bit of both then, basically. Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, what are the signs and symptoms of poor gut health? Visually, can you, I know it might be quite an obvious one, right? And, you know, not to start talking about how people's stomachs look, but, you know, what are some of the obvious signs, would you say, for, you know, of poor gut health?
Sure. So there's a difference between bloating and, let's say, abdominal fat. So let's put it a nice way. So there's a difference between bloating and abdominal fat. So bloating tends to be hard, distended, and it's uncomfortable. Abdominal fat is also bad for our health, but that's a topic for another conversation another day. But when we're thinking about gut health symptoms, so how do I tell if I have kind of poor gut health? Well, number one, we're thinking about those digestive symptoms. So things like gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, things that we would think of as kind of tummy troubles. But then also we can see it on the outside as skin issues. So acne, eczema, rosacea, any of that redness of the skin or that inflammation of the skin can be down to poor gut health. But then as can things such as weight gain, weight loss, brain fog, joint pain, it's all related to the inflammatory response that we get if we have poor digestive health.
Joint pain as well.
Mm-hmm. So anything that is when we have poor gut health, what happens is that things get into the bloodstream that shouldn't be in there. So they come in through that digestive wall lining. Now, when we have things in our bloodstream that shouldn't be there, our amazing immune systems set off an immune response, which creates systemic inflammation. Now, we want our immune system to do the work, but not all of the time and not in things that are not life-threatening. But if we have poor gut health, we're constantly setting off our immune system, which leads to inflammation, which can be everything from brain fog to tiredness to joint pain.
Right. That's very interesting. I wouldn't think there would be like a link between gut health and joint pain. It sounds like the gut affects a lot more of the body than we think, basically. Would that be right?
It literally affects every single system in our body. So if you think everything from our brain function to our mood and cognition, to our energy levels, to our immunity, to how well we sleep, even to how many calories we take in from food, even the type of food we crave, is all regulated by our gut health.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What can we do to kind of let's say, improve gut health? Would it be through dieting, maybe not trying to, you know, take away your light here, but exercising maybe and that kind of thing? I suppose I'm calling out some of the more obvious things.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is that a lot of those obvious things, kind of those foundational things for health, improve everything. So they're going to improve gut health. They're going to improve heart health, like we talked about before. So what's wonderful about when you create healthy habits is that they can positively affect so many parts of your body. So really, especially in terms of gut health, the number one thing that we can do is limit the amount of processed foods that we're having. So, you know, that fish and chips, maybe not 3 times a week, that beer, maybe a couple of times during the week, but really focusing on making sure that you're getting a ton of healthy proteins, healthy fats, and a ton of lots of fruit and vegetables. So all of that wonderful fiber.
Of course.
So that's really the basics. And then thinking about exercise is another great one. Stress relief is another great one. And then we can also think about some targeted foods. So things like collagen and bone broth, which help to heal the intestinal lining. And then things like fermented foods and probiotic supplements, which help to keep our microbiome, that population of bacteria, nice and healthy.
Does it get to a point where someone needs to use like medication to maintain their gut health? Does it get to the point where, and I suppose I'm talking about quite high level cases where the person's gut health is in a really poor condition, does it get to a point where actual medical treatment's needed?
Yeah, so ideally we want to catch people before that place. So very, very long story short, how I actually used to be a professional dancer and how I came into this industry and went back to school and retrained was that I was actually put on a morphine drip because my digestive health stopped working. So this is another reason why I'm so passionate about this area, because it really was my own story. Now, for most people, if we're talking general digestive issues, they're not going to get there. So this is really just talking about, you know, your average person walking down the street, how can they help improve their digestive health? So we shouldn't have to get to there. But what we do find in conventional medicine is that it's a lot of symptom management rather than curing something. So I'm sure a lot of your listeners will have been diagnosed with IBS. Now, IBS is really a collection of symptoms rather than a diagnosis. So it's my job, if someone comes to me with IBS, it's my job to say, okay, what can we do with diet, with lifestyle, with supplements, so we can manage the IBS rather than you having to be on a painkiller or a muscle relaxant for the rest of your life.
Right. Okay. Gut health, I mean, it can lead to quite serious health conditions. Well, I suppose I'm quite bad like that. I always like to go to the extreme. But do you know what it is? I'll explain what it is, Jennifer, and for our listeners as well. All right. I suppose we want to avoid people. I'm trying to raise awareness here, basically. We want to make sure people, I hope the listeners are, you know, taking on board that gut health can lead to really serious issues. I suppose that's why I'm kind of going into more the high-end level of the conversation, of rather than keeping it like, you know, a bit of, you know, what can it cause in terms of poor health and all the rest of it. I really want to know, what is the extreme worst case scenario that can happen if you've got poor gut health? What real serious health conditions can it lead to?
Yeah, so it's one of those things that actually we're seeing that the majority of chronic diseases have a link to poor gut health. So we're basically able to link poor gut health back to the expression of most chronic diseases, and especially autoimmune diseases as well. So we see that there's a huge link between autoimmune disease, this can be anything from thyroid to rheumatoid arthritis, that have a huge link with that gut health piece of the puzzle. And how this happens is that if we have what we call intestinal permeability or leaky gut, so things are getting into that bloodstream through the gut wall that they shouldn't be, the immune system sets off that response, and that can cause these autoimmune issues. So basically our immune system goes on red alert and it starts attacking the body. So the immune system is on red alert. It can't find these invaders and it starts attacking the body. And that's how autoimmune diseases express. So that's number one. We also see a huge link in the metabolic health. So things like type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, also with heart health. There are specific enzymes that we see in clients and patients with coronary heart disease that can be linked back to poor gut health. And also 30% of cancers are digestive in nature as well. So yes, we can talk on one side of, you know, feeling better and feeling more energized, but we can also think that gut health, if you look after your gut health, it can go a huge way to prevent chronic and metabolic disease.
It leads to issues with basically the rest of the body, the heart and other organs as well, and all the rest of it. By the sound, it sounds like your gut is the key place to start in terms of looking after the body, because it's what comes into basically what we put into ourselves. Kind of makes us, if that makes sense, you know.
You are what you eat, and it's so funny. I've done a few interviews recently when people have asked me, you know, does diet really affect our health? You know, does what we eat? And I say to people, everything that we eat becomes the building blocks of who we are. So as you and I sit here today, we are literally made of what we ate however many years ago. And you wouldn't build a house with poor quality materials. So you shouldn't build your body with poor quality materials. And how do those materials get in, or how does that food get in? Through our digestive system. So if we're not filtering out the things that are bad and we're not absorbing the things that were good, we're not being able to create those healthy building blocks, those healthy cells for our whole body.
And absolutely. And also eating well, when I say well, I mean healthy, helps build our immune system, which helps protect us from, you know, unfortunately, not everything in the world can be protected by the immune system. However, a lot of things can, you know, can be fought using the immune system, and what you put into your body is absolutely key.
Well, 100%. And thinking about this in terms of gut health as well, it's like, yes, everything that we absorb, we need an abundance of nutrients for our immune system, but also 70 to 80% of our immune system is housed in the gut. So if we have poor gut health, we're not going to have a healthy immune system. And, you know, the immune system has got so much press over the last couple of years, and rightly so, but there's so much that we can do to empower ourselves to help with our immunity. And number one is looking after that gut health. So 70 to 80% of your immune system is in the gut. So if your gut health, your gut isn't healthy, your immune function isn't going to be optimal.
I'm guessing gut health also affects weight loss. There must be some kind of correlation there. Would that be right?
There is. And actually, it's a little bit more, I find this fascinating. It's a little bit more science fiction than kind of you would think. So yes, obviously we're thinking about digesting the energy and the nutrients from our food, but our microbiome, so that population of bacteria, can actually influence everything from the type of foods that we crave to how many calories we absorb from food. So this isn't our brain doing it. This isn't our hormones doing it. This is literally those gut bacteria saying to you, Gavin, oh, I think I'd like a donut, or I think I'd like a beer. And then also a healthy microbiome can digest up to 30 to 40% of the energy that we bring in from food.
Bringing up donuts, right? So the other day I went out, right, and I was going past the Krispy Kreme's shop, and I was like, oh my gosh, I would love to go in there and buy some donuts. I stopped myself. Okay. But, yeah. But you know when you go to Tesco's, you're in Boston, so here in the UK, I'm sure you've got Krispy Kreme's and all that there anyway. But basically in Tesco's, they've got an actual Krispy Kreme's stand with the donuts in it, and I just like a nice simple straightforward donut, yeah, okay, with the icing on it, yeah, okay. just keep it nice and straightforward, but it's so lovely. So when I see that once every 1 to 2 weeks, I think, you know what, I'm gonna let it go. I'm just gonna buy one and eat one and get it out of the way, because you've got to, you know.
I mean, here's the thing, one donut every 2 weeks is not going to be the end of the world. Also depending on the rest of your diet, if the rest of your diet's healthy, not an issue at all. But I think it's just interesting to know that it might not even be you consciously craving that donut. It might be the bacteria in your gut, especially the unhealthy bacteria that feed off sugar and refined carbohydrates, kind of saying to you, Gavin, you know, that donut Krispy Kreme looks really good. So I guess my point is, you can use your gut bacteria as an excuse to eat the Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, that's interesting. Lovely. Right. You've just justified how I can do that now. Maybe I could do it more often. Do you know what I mean?
I'm going to rescind that and say that's not great health advice.
But the other thing is, what's dangerous here in the UK is that we're quite spoiled. We've got restaurants and takeaway services which do all kinds of food. I mean, we're quite spoiled, really. You know, I've been to other countries where you don't get the variety of food that you get here, especially in London, you know?
Yeah.
The temptation is huge. It's huge. Yeah.
And I think also the scary thing is now that we don't even have to, and obviously in the US, even worse, but the now we don't even have to, we used to have to walk somewhere to get food. Then we used to have to get in our car to get food. And now with all of these food delivery services, you don't have to leave your couch to get your KFC delivered. And I think that is such a, it's a scary place to be, that we don't even need to walk to our car to get that junk food basically delivered to our couch.
Uber Eats, right, is the devil's work. Let me tell you something. You sit down, you're watching TV now, could be late, could be really late, and you're thinking, what could I eat right now? And you know what, there's so much variety, there's so many things to choose from. It's quite disturbing, I'll be honest with you.
It's too easy because your bank details are already in there. You don't have to speak to a person. It's like you don't have to move off the couch to deliver anything that you want to get delivered. And let's be real, if it is 1 o'clock in the morning and you're watching, I don't know, Squid Games or whatever people are watching these days, you know, you're not going to go, oh, you know what? I really fancy a salad. It's never going to be that. It's always going to be like, oh, I really fancy pizza, or oh, I really fancy a kebab. So, you know, one day there could be some regulations around these things. I really doubt it.
I doubt it very much. I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Maybe in 10 years' time, when I'm hoping to go into food politics, we might put some regulations around these things. But I really don't think so. And as you say, there is just too much. It's too easy. It's absolutely too easy.
I don't think they'd restrict it, because then we're looking, it's like the big, it's like you mentioned earlier on before we were talking, the Big Brother state, you know, how much more restrictions can we put on people? And I think the government look at things, in a way, government look at things thinking, well, look, people have the right to make choices and do what they want, really. And I think as long as, I think it's about awareness about, you know, what are some of the implications of what you eat and that kind of thing. So at least the person's aware, if that makes sense. Putting a restriction on it will be, I think people would, it would not go down well. Even though we want people to be healthy, I know we want the public to be healthy, we want the public to become more healthy, there is a problem, you know, it's widely out there in the world, obesity is becoming more of an issue, do you know what I mean? But yeah, I just think it's, putting restrictions might be really difficult.
You know? Oh, it would be impossible, and it's never going to happen. Mm. But how do we start to, you know, we personal choice is just, it's, human beings are wired to want to eat highly processed, high calorie, sugary, fatty foods. That's how it's a survival mechanism for us. And they also set off dopamine responses in the brain. So when the reason why you feel so great when you have your Krispy Kreme donut is because sugar acts on the opioid receptors in the brain, and you get that dopamine hit and you feel great afterwards.
I feel fantastic, to be honest with you. I feel $1 million.
Exactly. But the scary thing is that food manufacturers know that, and they spend billions of dollars and billions of pounds on engineering that Krispy Kreme donut to make you feel amazing in the short term afterwards.
You're right. It's the short term. It's what alcohol does to people. Everybody feels a bit, well, not everybody. Some people feel a bit happy and blah, 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 and all the rest of it. But the next morning, or long-term effects, another really good thing, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's not even just, you know, I think with alcohol, at least we have an awareness of that. With things like your Krispy Kreme or Pringles is a great example, their slogan is, once you pop, you can't stop. And that's because billions of dollars have been spent on food scientists to make that food hyper palatable, so you can eat a whole tube without thinking about it.
Yes, that's so true. you're absolutely on the mark there. I've always said it, especially with ice cream. Yeah, you know when you eat something, right, and you're like, oh God, this is going down so fantastically, and it's easy to digest, and it's soft, and it tastes so good, and blah, 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 all the rest of it. Yeah. And you want some more after that. I bought a tub the other day of Haagen-Dazs. Right, the pralines one, the nuts in it. Oh my gosh, it is unbelievable. Now, I thought, right, I'm going to paste this little tub. I'm going to paste it over the next few days. right? So I had my food, right? And I sat down with this tub of Haagen-Dazs, right? And I started eating it. And I'm thinking, this will be my last little spoonful. It's never a last spoonful.
No, you might as well. Thousands upon thousands, probably millions of dollars have gone into the science of making that ice cream so palatable and have such a great mouthfeel that there is no way that you can stop at half a tub. Even I can't. And we don't have that thing in the house, that kind of thing in the house. And if we do, we just know to accept that we're going to eat the whole thing, because scientists have made that so delicious and so easy to eat. You're going to eat the whole tub.
And you're 100% right. I've noticed that over the years. But I thought, we've got to challenge ourselves, right? So I thought, let me try this year. I'm going to try this again. And it doesn't ever work.
Yeah.
And it's not just that. It's everything else which is not really good for that. McDonald's. Oh, dearie me. Love a little fillet fish burger once in a while, you know? So might have two sometimes. But anyway, the point is that. How good does it taste? So soft and it's nice and it goes down so easily. And it's just very disturbing, I find. I'll be honest with you. I've got this never-ending battle with food. I really have.
But you and everybody else, because we are wired as human beings to want high-calorie, high-sugar foods, because that's how we survived back when we were hunter-gathering our food. And, you know, specific foods set off specific responses in our brain, like sugar and the dopamine response, dopamine being our feel-good hormone. So we have evolved with that evolutionary biology. Now, that used to be great back when we were cave people and we had to hunt and gather our food and we would go for a long time without food. So our bodies were wired to have those high-calorie foods so they would last us for a time. We've just talked about how we are exactly the opposite now as a society, whereas Uber Eats is the opposite to hunter-gathering our food. And so we're still wired to crave those foods, but now we can get them at a moment's notice without expending any energy.
This is difficult, this show, I've got to say. food so gets to me. Now, just for my listeners, right, just for all our listeners and people that are listening, by the way, I do eat very healthy. The things I've mentioned today is when I relapse.
Okay.
You know, we all go through it. Once a week, I have to have a McDonald's. It has to be a fillet fish. And now, people might laugh, right, but I have tried ordering a fillet fish and instead of chips, having mini carrots.
Okay, I like that.
And, you know, it was all right. I'll be honest with you, it was fine. It was fun. But on principle grounds, I stopped doing that and I thought, do you know what? If you're going to really be bad, you might as well be really bad. Just get rid of this craving for the chips and the little Filet-O-Fish burger out the way, and then you can get on with the rest of your life. So I just keep it like that now, to be honest with you. A pizza happens once every couple of weeks. Fish and chips once every couple of weeks. In between all of that, I try my best to kind of keep it down to some simple carbs, some protein being whether it's corn or fish, having some salad as well then, all the rest of it. And sometimes I might mix it up. I might get an Italian as well, you know, all the rest of it. But on the whole, it's healthy. Some grilled fish as well. I'm not going to go to the whole diet thing now. But yeah, on the whole, it's all good. But I think just for our listeners, I think if we can keep majority of the time to a healthy diet, but then, you know, 20% of the week has to be a bit unhealthy, isn't it? Let's be honest. Just to keep it going, just that little bit of balance. Because otherwise, now this is from self-experience, when you repress yourself too much, it all comes back, basically. I've tried doing that. I remember 2-3 weeks I had some brilliant diet going on, and then I completely relapsed, and it was for about a good few days there was some real disgusting binging going on.
So you know. I feel like, Gavin, when we chat, I feel like it's a confessional. I feel like
it's counseling, that's what it is.
so here's the thing. I think There's lots to unpack there. And I think something that I see a lot of right now is, you know, people saying, well, you know, food should be intuitive and we should be allowed to eat what we want. And my response to that is what we consider food these days compared to what food actually is. I think that's a big piece of this puzzle as well. So, you know, I would beg to differ on your fillet of fish. You know, I know somewhere in there's a little bit of white fish, but that bun is not some organic whole wheat fiber-rich
bread. Full of sugar in it and salt and stuff.
You know, it's just it's a lot of chemicals. So I think that's one piece of the puzzle. And I think the other thing is just to think that eating healthily doesn't have to mean that you feel deprived. So, you know, I would say that we, you know, myself and my husband, we have sugar on birthdays and holidays only. So we don't have sugar as part of our everyday diet.
No.
I know.
Let's rewind this a little bit, right? Let's delve this. So you and your husband, right, on birthdays and maybe Christmases and maybe other people you might know, birthdays, and you might have a bit of sugar and cake. Would that be correct?
Gluten-free, dairy-free cake, but with sugar, yes.
And otherwise, you guys tend to stay away from sugar.
Yeah.
How on earth do you do that? Now, this show's been, I've been a bit personal here. The reason why I've done this today is because I'm not alone. We've got listeners out there, I'm sure, that are listening and will be like, you know what? We have our cravings as well. We go through this situation. And that's why, you know, I'm like a bit of a case study representing the people, basically. But you've taken things to a whole other extreme, Jennifer. How on earth do you not eat sugar in between those times? How'd
you
do it?
And I'm still looking good, and I'm still smiling. So here's the thing. It's kind of the more you know, the more you're like, this is just not worth it. So the damage that sugar does to your, you know, to your skin, to your cellular health, to your metabolism, to your brain, to your heart, the more you know, it's one of the things about being in this job, the less willing I am to put my body under that stress. Now, that's one part of it. But the other part of it is, we have to think about what else we put in when we take sugar out. Now, a lot of the time people will go, okay, I'm going on a diet, and they will remove sugar and they will remove all carbohydrates and they'll go low fat and they might go vegetarian or vegan, and they're taking everything out of their diet. And that is the number one way to fall off the wagon hard. So what we have to do is, when we're trying to balance out those sugar cravings, especially when we get started, is making sure that we're adding in a ton of protein and a ton of healthy fat and a ton of fiber. What that's going to do is that's going to balance out your blood sugar, and it's going to help balance your hunger hormones. So it's going to go a long way to help you not crave that sugar. So if I have a crazy busy day and I don't end up having lunch, or, you know, what it happens to us all, then I'm going to crave those sugary foods because my body's like, hang on a second, I need energy. But if I'm keeping my diet balanced throughout the day, I'm having a ton of protein, healthy fat, a ton of veggies, I don't crave sugar because my body doesn't need it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
There's a lot of discipline there. I can hear it. It's, you know, a lot of self-talk as well.
After 2 weeks, it's not. Because here's the thing, and a lot of my clients are like, I don't have the willpower to give up sugar. And I say to them, it is not your willpower, it's your wiring, it's your biochemistry. You can balance out those hunger hormones, you can balance out your insulin, your blood sugar. It actually stops all of those cravings, and you don't have to have that willpower. So I think people need to understand, it's not about willpower. It's certainly not about my willpower. It's just that all of my signals are so balanced that I don't have those cravings.
Is it a bit of NLP as well? You've got to kind of rewire the brain. And, do you know what I mean? A bit of, like, you know, psychologically, like, saying to yourself, well, you can do this. And if you think, you know, it causes these issues and it causes that issues. And then after the 2 weeks, you tend to become more relaxed with it. Because you're right, it's usually the first 2 weeks, and not just with food, I think it's with also cigarettes and alcohol. Yeah. It's the first 2 weeks usually, which I've heard from people that have given up or were going through the process of it, that are really difficult. And after that, things tend to get easier.
Yeah, because there's so much in this. This is not just about consuming something. This is about habit. This is about what it means to you. And this is also about, you know, the reason why something is addictive is it sets off a pleasure response in the brain. So as I was saying with sugar, it sets off the same response in the brain that opioids do. So this is why we have such an issue with it. So there is a whole, it is not just a case of this is something that I consume or something that I do. There's a whole tangled thing of signals in the body, of what it means to you, your lifestyle, habits. You know, a lot of people will not smoke until they're at the pub and they've got a pint and then they'll have a cigarette. So there's a lot to it. But I think doing everything that you can to support yourself, so especially in the case of sugar, it's, you know, if you're going to give up sugar, think about all of the things that you add into your diet to help balance out those hunger hormones and those cravings.
A lot to think about there. A lot of reflection. I think some of the stuff that's coming out is brilliant for our listeners, especially, you know. Does what you eat slow down the aging process? Now, this is the conversation we've had before now, right? Let's be honest.
This is the conversation we were having before we came on air. 100%. So there's some really interesting science around longevity and anti-aging. And, you know, there are some researchers out there and some doctors that say that aging is actually a disease, that actually our bodies don't have to age. Now, I don't personally believe that in such a long, you know, that end of the spectrum. But yes, 100%, as we talked about at the beginning, you are what you eat, and we can eat specifically to help slow down or prevent the aging process.
Because, I mean, this was some years ago now, I was reading about how as you get older, if you become more vegetarian, it puts less stress on the gut, the digestive system, sorry. And therefore, the body's not underneath as much pressure to digest foods and all the rest of it, especially hard meats or things that are just generally difficult to digest. So the body tends to have less pressure. So the body starts to relax more in terms of all the rest of it. And aging becomes more slowed in sense of the process. Like if you're a vegetarian, there's hardly any pressure there. Let's be honest, the food just goes in. It's, you know, digested with no issues. And I mean, I have to say, I feel that just from my own experiences, I feel if your body is putting into your body simple foods, which are not too complex, it definitely has an effect on your skin. I think your skin looks better as well. And also, generally speaking, the age process, I feel, does slow down. And I feel that's from my own experience as well. Now, I'm not saying I look completely young and, you know, all the rest of it. I'm in my early 20s or my teens or anything like that. But I do feel that it's definitely done something.
It's not black and white as to, you know, a vegetarian diet, a vegan diet, or a meat eating diet. That's not what we're talking about. And what we are talking about is the level of processing of the food and how close to its original form is the food. Now, I will push back a little bit on that vegetarian piece of the puzzle, because we see that most vegetarian and vegan diets are deficient in some essential nutrients, things like B12 and iron. So for me personally, I actually think that a healthy diet does contain some really great quality of meat. But we're really thinking, again, it's that quality of meat. So someone may go vegetarian and vegan, and the benefits that they're getting is because they're actually eating less processed food and more fruits and vegetables. It might not be about removing the meats. Now, we definitely shouldn't be having a ton of processed meats and meats with nitrates and things like hot dogs from carts on Oxford Street, those things that, you know, we have the same in New York here, you know, really overly processed foods, barbecued foods, so foods that are kind of char grilled or burnt, they can cause issues, and especially in terms of aging. But really, we're thinking about quality of food and, again, digestive health. And the number one food that causes cellular aging is sugar. And this is how it works. So when you have too much sugar in your blood, it causes something called glycation. And glycation takes your cells and makes them kind of hard and sticky. So if you ever think of, if you go to a barbecue or you have barbecue food and it has like that sugary sauce on the outside of the meat, and then it gets like all char grilled and kind of crispy, that's basically, if you're having a ton of sugar, that's what's happening in your body. So we really want to be thinking about lowering the glycation and then also what we call oxidative stress. So oxidative stress we get from processed foods and from stress and environmental toxins. And when we have oxidative stress, what that does is that produces free radicals, which age all of the skin cells. So that was a very long, complicated answer to you.
I'm still trying to process the first part, to be honest. I'll tell you what I'm stuck at, Jennifer. I'm stuck at the bit where you were talking about the meat, when you put that sugary substance on it and it becomes all crispy. And I thought, that sounds really nice.
That's the thing, but you don't want, you know, I know I certainly don't, and you don't want your skin looking like that. We don't want our muscles looking like that, our cells looking like that. But that's the process that happens when we have a ton of sugar in our diet. So I guess a long, complicated answer made short is it's about the quality of food that you're having can really affect whether you age on time, before time, or after time.
Right. Okay. Is there anyone that stands out in mind that you've worked with and you've helped them to improve their gut health and seen them come like a long way? Is there anyone that stands out for you?
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting that it's not necessarily in exactly the way that you think of. So I had a patient that came to work at the clinic, came to us at the clinic they're working in New York, and we did all of her testing and she came back with some gut health issues. So we put her through a gut healing protocol. And what was amazing was that all of her cholesterol panel improved. So through doing her gut health, we were able to manage her heart health and also get her out of the at-risk categories for heart disease. So I think for me, that's something that's like, yeah, gut health, we know it's going to improve digestion and energy and bloating. But also we've got that evidence, that those numbers that show that actually improving this woman's gut health really brought her cholesterol markers down and got her out of at-risk categories.
Let's go into a bit more detail there. How did you do that? Did you put her into some kind of regime, some kind of weekly diet and that kind of thing? How did that work?
Yeah, so number one, we're thinking about, and people can do this in different levels as well. So I think for me, it's really important that people listening understand that you don't have to be perfect to progress. So really, just by doing some of these things are going to make a huge change. But with someone like her who is working with me one-to-one, what we did was we eliminated processed foods. We did a food sensitivities panel. So we took out the food that she was having a response to. And then we added in some healing foods. So things like bone broth and collagen. And these foods actually help to repair the lining of the gut wall. So they're really, really repairing. Bone broth and collagen, 100%. Then we added in some fermented foods. And then she just really kind of did that for four. And this was literally, I think it was like 4 or 6 weeks. And we saw these huge reductions in her cholesterol panel. It can be challenging. You know, it's not the type of thing that you're going to want to do over the holidays or New Year or your birthday, but it is something that you can do whilst living in the real world. So thinking about eliminating those processed foods, adding in bone broth, adding in collagen, adding in some fermented foods. We did a probiotic and really focused on that, and it made amazing results for her.
Did that also include like maybe some kind of exercise regime or anything like that at all? Or was it mainly food?
This was mainly food, but we, you know, I am, the word holistic in my job title just means that I work beyond the food. So we talked about exercise, we talked about stress management, but this wasn't having this woman in the gym for 5 days a week for an hour. This was more like, can we get you out and get you walking? Can we get your resistance training maybe for half an hour, 3 times a week? So exercise does have a big part to play, especially in the stress management role of it, but the majority of that was done with diet.
What's the best exercise to improve gut health? Is there something that can be done?
I love this question. So actually, yes. So we find that people with the worst gut health are endurance athletes. So people running, you know, people running marathons or people that do long distances, what this does is that, flipping back to the beginning of our conversation, this increases our cortisol levels. So it's our stress hormone. So the more of the stress hormone we have, the more this breaks down the digestive system. So we especially see this in endurance athletes, marathon runners, people that run a lot. Conversely, what we can do is by strength training and resistance training, that actually helps to manage your stress and lower your cortisol levels. But I think the key thing is really to think about is think about just as you do a variety in your diet, a variety of a type of exercise. And then just adding on that, it'd be remiss of me to say that things like yoga and breathing exercises, what these actually do is take us out of fight or flight and put us into rest and digest. So we hear these words fight or flight a lot of the time. We know that's when we're stressed out. When we're in fight or flight, our digestive system actually stops working. What we want to do is take time to be in rest and digest. And this can be yoga, walking in nature, meditating. And this actually helps our enteric nervous system, which are the nerves in our gut, to help boost digestion.
So it sounds like while exercise is good to do, we don't want to be extreme in that area, basically, because it releases 100%. The cortisol that causes stress, etc. And that puts pressure on the gut system.
100, you got it, exactly. So we're not saying don't go for a run, we're not saying don't go for a bike ride, we're not saying any of that, but it's when you do that endurance running, you know, and if that's someone's passion, 100%, but then you just want to think about the things you can do behind the scenes to undo any damage that you might be causing.
So maybe mix it up a little bit, bike riding, a bit of swimming, a bit of running, and, you know, obviously not the extreme of either of them, just a bit of everything and mixing it up a bit.
Do some yoga, go for a run, throw some weights around, go for a swim, play outside with the kids, take the dog for a walk, do some deep breathing. Done.
Just finally, just some top tips for gut health improvement. I know we've covered so much, but what would be the, as a little summary, what would be the best things to do to improve gut health?
I think something that we didn't touch on is chewing your food. And I think this is the start of digestion, but it's honestly, if I had a pound or a dollar for every client that come to me and being like, I don't have time to chew my food, I'd be a millionaire. And that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. But it happens to the best of us. And the process of digestion actually starts in the mouth. So we have chemical digestion, mechanical digestion, and electrical digestion. And in the mouth, obviously, we're breaking down the food by that mechanical digestion. So that's really important, because if we're putting those big pieces of food into our digestive system, we're not going to be able to digest them very well. And then also when we chew, a specific digestive enzyme is released by the salivary glands that you don't find anywhere else in the body. So if you're not chewing your food, you're going to put a ton of stress on the digestive system. You're not going to be able to digest that food properly.
That's brilliant. Yeah, I didn't really think about the whole chewing. Not many of us do, I suppose. Not a lot of us do, yeah.
And especially as we're all so busy and we are tending to eat our meals at our lap. You know, I try and have a rule that I don't eat a meal at a laptop. But, you know, it happens to the best of us. And then we wonder why an hour, 2 hours later that we feel kind of funny and we've got cramps in our digestive system. It's because we haven't taken the time to chew our food. So we've talked about so much today, but I think if people are going to take one thing away that's so easy to do, let's say simple to do, but not easy to do, is to chew your food properly.
Jennifer, you've been brilliant as always. Thank you so much. Where can people find you if they want a bit of advice and, you know, guidance or anything like that?
Yeah, come and hang with me. The best place to find me is at Jennifer Hanway on Instagram. So that's Jennifer Hanway on Instagram. I'm always in there answering your DMs. So any questions that you have about anything that we talked about today or anything else, or even how I managed to live sugar-free, jump into my DMs on Instagram and I'd love to chat.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And if any listeners need to hear about my ranting on about, you know, my relapses in food, you're welcome to see me at GavinJ417. I'm trying my best to give you some advice, but I can't count on it. All right. Until next time, take care.